Hey everybody, Jenny Clift here for another episode of our Better Business, Better Life podcast. And today I'm really excited to welcome Nick Thompson, who we've been talking about doing this for so long, and we're finally here. So I'm in Bali and just been getting absolutely no sympathy from Nick about the weather here. My biggest issue is, you know, the dropping frangipani and, you know, getting a swim in between meetings. And Nick is in Calgary in Canada, where snow is forecast pretty much any moment.
Any moment.
So, Nick Thompson, welcome, fellow EO member, fellow EO trainer, which is how we know each other. And topic really for today, Nick, is your book, which I love the title of, Look Out, You're About to Get Effed, and the 13 biggest pitfalls of business and how to avoid them. And what I love about this is from your lived experiences and from actual experiences, not about, you know, reading a book or, you know, hearing about other people or, you know, taking that advice. It's actually from lived experience in your own entrepreneurial journey. So share us a little bit about your story and who you are.
Great. Thanks very much, Jenny. And thanks for having me on your show. It's a true honor to be across the world on the other side of the world and be able to connect with you this way. So I appreciate it. My entrepreneurial story went back to after university. I ran ski schools and did marketing for ski hills for 10 years. So I skied professionally for 10 years and ended up getting in business with my parents. My parents were looking for a small company to fund that could be their retirement plan, and asked me to join them. Asked my brother as well, and he's in the arts, and said, business, no way. So I said, you know, anything to do with marketing would be super fun. And so we found a small business. I was the fifth employee. And 4 years later, they said, you're good. Time to buy us out and retire. And so that was at about 12 employees in the year 2000. That's when I joined EO. So just over 22 years
in EO. Wow, 23 years, yeah, crazy.
And since, so I ended up, and I honestly, all success I attribute to the network, connections, tools, learnings from EO, as well as all the tools. So you know, we teach Accelerator. You are heavily involved in EOS. All the best practices and tools, I implemented them, grew the business from just qualifying for EO with about 20 employees at the time to 350 employees, 20 office locations in North America, warehousing on five continents, and just topping over the 100 million gross revenue mark. And again, I attribute it all to EO and the tools and the network with EO. During that time, of course, there's lots of highs and lows in business, lots of partnerships, lots of horror stories, and some great success as well. So definitely a roller coaster of emotion. And during that time, and since that time, I've incubated, grown, and exited a number of other companies as well, using the same sort of network and tools. And upon a very tumultuous exit from my original company, which I write about very vulnerably, I might add, I'm a big proponent of all the business best leaders and thought leaders, the books like, you know, Jim Collins and Adam Grant and Simon Sinek. And I'm a huge, you know, student of that and believe in it heavily. But what I noticed was there isn't a book out there that says, here are all the things to look out for, right? Here are all the dangers of business. And it's not that sexy, right? It's a little bit depressing, actually, when you talk about all the dangers and the pitfalls. And I said, you know, I've lived through a lot of them, and I know a lot of people in our network in EO and you know, from news stories and that sort of thing that have gone through the similar pitfalls I have. I'm going to write a book that has, and 13 was a very purposeful number. Forum mate told me you got to make it 13. I had 12 at the time. And so I came up with the 13 biggest pitfalls of business. So my story is intertwined, and I add in all sorts of other real stories to say, hey, this company went through it, this business owner went through it, and some public ones that people will recognize as well, just to, you know, make sure that people understand this isn't a one-off pitfall. This can happen to any business, and what to look out for, and then tips on how to avoid those pitfalls. Nice. So it's
taken off. I'll come back to Y13. But I'll come back to that.
It was Amazon bestseller, and it's taken off. And and I'm doing a lot of podcasts and webinars across the globe. Really, just to, I don't make money from it, quite frankly. I'm doing it because I want to put this in the hands of entrepreneurs to help, because that's the community that we love, right?
Yeah. And I see this so often with EOers, and particularly our training community, actually, of we're really in that phase, I guess, in our business or our life, where it is kind of that give back time. Right. So two questions we always ask at the start of our podcast is, share with me two wins, a personal and a professional, maybe from the last year or less than that, the professional one.
Yeah, so a professional one in 2023. So my wife and I have a new business. It's virtual executive assistant in bookkeeping and online business managers. So we hire out virtual employees, if you will, to companies across North America on a contract basis. And it has grown in leaps and bounds. This year, we've been able to really focus in on our key core best type of client. You'll know that. And we've really been able to focus in on that. We fired a bunch of clients that didn't fit our core values, and we've been able to really hone in on who we work with best. So that's been a great success this year, professionally.
Nice. I love that. I'm now working with Will Scott in with the Culture Fix, and a big part of that, you know, it's not only the values, but it's deeper than just the values, I should say. It is not only your staff, it is also your clients, you know, making sure that everybody fits in that. Because, you know, if I look back through our business and the really difficult, prickly customers that, you know, when they rang, that you kind of went, oh no, what do they want this time? Just moving those on just makes it a much nicer place for everybody. So
you got it.
Super critical. Yeah. And a personal win.
Yeah. And personally, we had some challenges this year with some family health issues. My wife's mother and grandmother got ill at the same time. And mom was taking care of grandma. So we actually went and lived with them for 3 months on Vancouver Island. Helping them through that. And so it's been quite a difficult year. And we've come to the point now where everybody's getting the care that they need, and we've got everything sorted out. So we've been able to, you know, free up ourselves again to reconcentrate on, you know, growing our lives again. So it's great to have family taken care of where they need to be taken care of.
Nice. And you've managed to pull together the business and the values and getting that work done as well. It's it's like the perfect storm, isn't it?
It was, yes.
And I'm sorry to hear about the illness in your family, but good to hear that that it's all sort of back. Sounds like it's on track.
Somewhat on track, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, good. So tell me, with the book, why 13? You said that somebody in your forum or somebody in EO said it has to be 13. What's the 13
number?
So,
and I think it's more of a North American thing, Jenny, because I've had that question from people in other countries. 13 is considered a bad luck number. in North America. I'm not sure where else it is.
My son's born the 13th of January. Okay. We've always kind of joked that it's, we should have known.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's why we thought, 13 was an appropriate number for the pitfalls. Personally, it's a good luck number in my family, always has been. I got married on the 13th. On purpose. And, it's always, I wear the number 13 with sports. But the norm is it's supposed to be a bad luck number. So that's why we picked it. Yeah.
So go with the, and I guess it fits, the 13 pitfalls. I'm sure there's, more than 13. How did you narrow it down to 13?
That's the other thing. So I was actually, at lunch with a colleague today, that said, hey, listen, I've read your book and there's at least another 13 you could write. And I said, yeah, it might lend its way to the second book for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the next one? You're about to get effed again. Here's the next 13.
That's right. The next 13. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I'll write that down. Yeah. You're in the credits.
You're welcome. I'll be expecting royalties on that one.
Yeah.
So what you said, you you love looking at books, and there was nothing around that sort of 13 what to watch out for. What was the catalyst? When did you decide to actually write the book?
Yeah. So again, I write the story in the book, and it's when it's on that tumultuous exit. From the company. So when we were growing to a larger size, we merged with another company. We merged boards of directors. I gave up my chairmanship to another partner because I had a young family at the time. I didn't want to do all the traveling. He didn't have family, came from a larger company, used to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and said, look, big business. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. Big business, so you take over the chairmanship. As things progressed, we were butting heads with members of the board, and the way we built our company, I still believe this to the day, you want to build your company, you need to build your people. And they came in and said, we need to build our shareholder return, we need to cut people. And I was like, whoops, I think we might have made a mistake. So as much as I argued and fought, I'm one vote at that time. So I got outvoted, and there was a lot of cuts because they saw profit on the other side of that. I saw what I call the toilet bowl effect. You make cuts and then it gets worse. And then you're like, oh, we need to make more cuts. And then it gets worse. And then you need to make more cuts. I call that the toilet bowl effect. And it was just spiraling. And so I finally took in early 2017, I took what I call my last stand. And I said, if you don't change the way you treat people and we start, rebuilding people, I'm going to leave. You're going to do it without me. And I thought that would change people's minds. And they just said, okay, bye. Fairly nonchalantly. So I found myself on the outside of my company. And, what happened after that was it kept toilet bowl spiraling, and early 2020 claimed bankruptcy. They no longer exist anywhere on the globe. So people will often say to me, hey, Nick, don't you feel vindicated? You were right. And I said, no, they killed my baby. I'll never get over that. Right. Yeah. That was my baby. And so part of the journey of healing was writing. Right. And so, I was writing, all the things that happened, because you always look back and say, what would I have done differently? Hindsight's 20/20. And so therapeutically, I was doing a bunch of writing and journaling what had happened, looking in the mirror. And it probably took me about 2 years to come to understand those were all decisions I made. And I have to take accountability for those. And in the meantime, maybe from all the lessons I'm taking out of it, I can help other companies and other entrepreneurs by actually publishing what I'm writing about. And that's how this book came to be.
Yeah, that was going to be around my next question. We exited our business 18 months ago, so made the decision early last year to I'd already exited, Nick exited sort of this time, or advised our partner after a merger that he was exiting as well.
Right.
And I think when we met with you in Canada, in the US last year, we were in the midst of that, and I know how difficult it was for us going through that, and it's probably not unlike what you've experienced. Yeah. How did you manage those first few weeks? Just think back to, you know, you've said, I'll leave, and they said okay, which is pretty much what happened to me. How did you manage going, because it's like grieving, it's like going through that grieving process,
but absolutely
sort of put yourself back there, and how did you do that sort of day-to-day exit, your team walking away?
It was definitely a very difficult time, because in the Calgary office where I was situated, I had built a commercial building that the office was in. So they're still in my building. And so, you know, and these are people that, you know, I've come to love like family. Mm. And so I would go in, you know, once a week just to visit, see how everyone's doing, make sure they felt they were okay without me being there. You know, I didn't want them to suffer. And I was told, you know, I was told by the board, you can't visit the company unless you reach out. We prearrange. It's got to be off business hours, because they thought maybe I would be in there trying to influence people to leave or whatever. You know, I had obviously had a strict non-compete and confidentiality agreement, and I was going to absolutely honor that. I just wanted to see the people that, you know, became family, and make sure they were okay. So it was very difficult saying I'm not allowed to visit. And I wasn't allowed to, you know, legal letter saying you can't contact anyone. And, you know, they were scared, right, that I was going to do something. And I had absolutely no intentions, but, you know, I understand. So it became very lonely very quickly. And I did lean very heavily on EO and on my forum group in EO for support, and my peer network. My wife is so smart. She said, look, you're a great person. You've always believed in people. You know, you're going to get through it. We're going to do other things. And she was the one that suggested that I come up with some sort of a mantra for myself, because I was doing a lot of looking in the mirror, like, you know, literally and figuratively, and, you know, saying, what did I do wrong? And am I a bad person? And those sorts of things go through your mind, right? And so I had a mantra that I said in the mirror every morning when I got up and every night when I went to bed, that you know, you're a good person. You mean well for people. You always had other people's interests best interest in mind. And you will be able to build something else, building great people again, because they will want to work with you, whoever that is. And I would say this sort of mantra. And it did take me couple of years before I sort of landed on my feet, and my wife had a company at that time, actually, and so it started to grow rapidly. The company we're in now, it started to grow rapidly, and she said, "Hey, you know all the tools and how to build people. This thing seems to be going somewhere, and can you help me build it?" So we've been growing it across North America since. So that's really helped me kind of refocus as well.
Yeah, we had just an out of the blue offer. Oh wow, coming up 6 years ago now, to buy our business, and it was one of the options was walk in, walk out, and various reasons why we didn't go down that path. But one of the main ones was, again, leaning on that EO network, speaking to a few people who said that Nick, my Nick, my husband, he and I have worked together for 27 years, who you know. He didn't have his what's next. And I think that was sort of set us on a path of, I'd already trained as an EOS implementer. I'd started to sort of transition out, or firstly into a role that I loved, which was people and culture in our business. But for him, he was still very invested in that business. It was his identity. And I often joke that, you know, when I'd said, if I suggested that we sell a business, I got a better reaction at, you know, cutting, perhaps we could cut off an important part of your anatomy, got a better response than selling the business. He was just so invested and tied up in that business. So for you to walk away, you know, just putting myself in your shoes of to that nothing, what do you do with yourself? That's it's such a hard place to be. And I wonder if, you know, you see people that retire and, you know, drop dead at their Christmas, at their retirement party, or, you know, they're dead a year later because, you know, you've done all this work for so many years and then go to what? Nothing. So tell me about the business. So you've stepped into your wife's business and really sort of in that, you know, building the people. How did that come about? Was it a conscious decision, or was it, you know, this is sort of, you know, I've got to do something with my time and this is here, or?
Yeah, thank you. It was a very conscious decision. So I'd helped my wife start the business because I've started businesses, know, you know, all the steps to, that it takes. And so I helped her start it, but I know, I mean, my wife knows how she would be an integrator extreme. Okay. Very, very well organized, knows how to implement things. And so, so I helped her start it, and, she was doing that. I was, busy, you know, grieving, coming to terms with things, writing, you know, writing the book, and looking for opportunities. And, you know, talking to the network and just looking for other opportunities. I became a EOA trainer immediately. As soon as I left the company, I became an EOA trainer because I wanted to do that anyway. I was accountability coach and mentor before. And so that, you know, sort of kept me busy and gave me some passion about people, right? Helping people, helping entrepreneurs. And so that helped as well, keep that purpose and passion going. And I did land with a company that does business consulting for larger businesses that have executive teams, and we help them with vision and strategy and execution. And so I work with about five clients for them, just on a contract basis. But again, purpose, passion on helping entrepreneurs and business leaders. And then it was about a year later, and my wife Lana said, this thing's growing and I need help. You've grown businesses. Let's sit down and talk about roles. She's 100% she has the final say on everything. I make sure she's the boss. So both my home and business life, she's the boss. And so, we worked together before, in a marketing company. So we understood how to work together and keep it separate. And so we, you know, rules of engagement, clear definitions of roles, making sure we have clarity. We have, dividing lines on decision making. And it's not without, you know, some arguments, right? It's bound to happen, but that's with any partner. And it seemed to go really well. We know our lanes. I'm a visionary and she's 100% an implementer. So, you know, she knows how to organize and run, and she's the CEO and runs the business. I'm president, I'm the visionary, and I'm looking for opportunities and business development and those types of things. So we absolutely know our lanes. It's worked out really well.
Nice. And I think, you know, as you know, Nick and I have worked together for 27 years, I think it is now. And I'm sure you get the same, you know, people often saying, oh, I don't know how you can work together. But I've always taken the view that I can't imagine building a business with anybody else. And I think we have even more invested in settling arguments and not taking them home. But I think more importantly for employees, for our team, is not taking home into the office. And that's something something we've always been very, very conscious of and very, I think, very good at, and have had that comment actually over the years from staff who've worked for another husband and wife team and comment sort of gone, oh, no, here we go again. But, you know, I think that's for couples who do work together, that's probably even worse than taking work home, is taking home into the office.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Absolutely.
So what of your time now, you're visionary, you're in that sort of business development and, you know, looking from an EOS perspective, you know, it's, you know, big relationships, often culture, research and development, or as I like to call it, rip off and duplicate,
yes.
You know, but that sort of big, you know, where are we going and you know, how are we going to get there and then dragging everybody along. What sort of time do you spend a week in the business right now? What else do you do with your time? What does your week look like?
So my week right now is I am going to publish another book. So it's pretty much on the shelf ready to publish now. It's gone through editing and test reading and that sort of thing. And it's on about, it's about how to define and some tools to go after whatever success looks like for you as an individual. So, because everyone's different, success is different. You know, a lot of people will look at money and you know, you and I know that's not, you know, how success is made. It's, there's a lot to do with, you know, connections with people and family and that sort of thing. So, so I'm working on that one. I do work with EO. So that's about probably 20% of my time. I do executive business coaching. It's probably 25% of my time. And then helping run and grow this business is probably the rest of it. So that takes me to about midnight. The quip I heard is, hey, if you want to be an entrepreneur and free up your time, you can work half time. You just have to decide on if it's the first 12 hours or the second 12 hours.
So that's actually quite true. Keep
busy. Yeah.
And I think in the early stages of you know, with the startup, it's, you know, you could go and get a job and work half as much as you do as a startup and probably earn twice.
Right.
You do all three times. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's as entrepreneurs, we're just a completely different beast to, I think, the rest of the people, non-entrepreneurial. So it's probably a good thing that we're a minority. Imagine if the whole world was full of crazy people like us.
That's right. That's right.
So let's pull one of your tips out of the book. Pull one of those and just let's talk through that.
Okay. So one of the ones I'll talk about here is I'm going to pick pitfall number 3. Everyone believes they deserve what you have. That's the pitfall. Everyone believes they deserve what you have. And there are stories in here related to how people have gotten stolen from, how they're good-natured, their willingness to help people, and that has been somewhat abused or maybe taken advantage of. And when you're running a company, if you own a company without any financial literacy education with your people, they believe that every single dollar of revenue goes to your bank. And they think you're rich to the
home and rolling in cash.
And you just mentioned it, very often we're unable to pay ourselves sometimes to keep everyone else paid, keep the business running and the lights on. And so, you know, staff believe that you're making, you know, all this money, and some will get a little jaded and actually take extra for themselves. Suppliers will go, oh, if you're doing well, then you should be paying us more. Clients say, well, if you're doing that well,
you should charge us less.
So everyone's sort of trying to take a chunk of that dollar that you're supposed to be taking home. And also partners, you know, if you have a partnership arrangement and that one perceives the partnership to be lopsided in terms of takeaway, or not or doing more work than the other partner, right? This is also marriage advice. So doing work than another partner, then that partner might feel a little jaded and actually start taking a bit more for themselves. So
I think I can tick yes to all of those.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the pitfall is really about making sure that you have involvement from everyone, that you are giving financial literacy, classes, if you will, or education somewhat to all the people that work with you, that you have solid agreements, two-way agreements with suppliers and clients should all be two-way. Like, how can we be a good client to our suppliers as well? And when you have those open relationships, people tend to not get jaded in terms of they think they're being taken advantage of and maybe they should take something a little extra. And there's lots of horror stories in there on entitlement and, people giving themselves raises without any authority and those types of things. So the tip really is to be transparent and to have very good written clarity with all your agreements.
Including shareholders' agreements.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had several partnerships over the years, and in each of them, we've spent a lot of money getting shareholders' agreements going in, which has saved us a lot of money getting out, or meant we've exited with a better outcome. Financially, perhaps not, emotionally or any of those sort of things, but financially we've been protected. I'm just a little bit scared. I feel like if we go through all 13 of these pitfalls, I'm going to tick yes to all of them. And it's interesting, I often have these conversations is that, this many years in business and you think you've seen everything and then something else will happen. When you say transparency, what's been your experience and also your attitude towards sharing high-level financials with employees?
Yeah, I've always been a big proponent of it. My philosophy is, I don't want to make this a direct relative analogy here, but somewhat like when you're speaking with your children, you need to speak to your children's level. If they're in grade two, you'll speak more basic. If they're in high school, you might give more detail. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So same with, the people in your organization, based on their understanding of financials, we believe in, if you give, here's the financial statement, they'll misinterpret a ton of things and it'll go back to, gosh, you're making money off our backs. So they don't understand all the risks we take and, personal guarantees and, liens on mortgages and all those things. We believe in, and we had monthly classes that was completely voluntary, but you come and we talk about what is profit, right? How does profit derived in a company? We had a lot of inventory. And so we talked about when people say, oh, it's okay, just write it off and the company gets its money back. So we're like, okay, we need to educate people on what writing off means, right?
Yeah.
And what that actually, and when we talk about, if we lose $1 in profit, how much in sales do we need to make up for that dollar, right? It's typically $50 to $100 worth of sales makes up that dollar of profit. And when we showed them this, people really started to take a lot of responsibility and say, hey, I think we could fix that item. We don't need to return it. I think we can save some money with this courier instead of, and so they became really responsible because they started to understand the value of of cost savings and the value of making some profit so a company can be sustainable. So that really enhanced our desire to be transparent. We're transparent at a higher level for sure. Not every line item. Yeah. That's not necessary.
And you don't go down to salaries and that sort of thing, but
yeah. Yeah. And one of the best practices that I heard a long time ago, and I can't remember, it might've been through Rockefeller Habits originally, but it was, as you grow, make sure that there is someone's name accountable to every single line item in your GL so that they can manage the budget of that line item. And in the beginning, your name's on all of it, right?
Yeah.
But as you grow, you can delegate things out. You can delegate, hey, what about the office supplies? What that can be delegated to somebody to take care of. And so as we built out, and ideally, your name's not on any of it, right? You know, you have people taking care of it in the end. And that way they become responsible and accountable because they have, hey, this is the dividing line of my responsibility as it pertains to the budget or you know, the parameters of that particular line item on the financials. And that really helped. So we implemented that as well.
I love that. I love the education. And we didn't go to that level of monthly, but certainly before we shared high-level financials, which we did at our monthly all-team meetings, everybody, I just found some super simple education pieces based on the sort of your home, you know, your right. home is no different to business. You have money coming in and you have to pay your bills and then, you know, what's left at the end.
That's right.
Sort of, you know, that analogy that people understand. And then when new people came in, they had to watch those videos as well. And again, that same sort of engagement, and that was mandatory. Everybody had to, but I love the idea of you offering that monthly sort of more in-depth education. We did things for our team, like we had a fairly young team, so we had somebody come in 1 month and talk to them about how to set yourself up to buy a house. You know, what mm-hmm. will the bank be looking for so that you can get that mortgage and you know, budgeting and all those sort of things, because, you know, just sort of life skills. But I really love that idea of that sort of deeper education, because as the business mm-hmm. grows, you want people to really understand and want to know how their efforts impact the bottom line. So we're getting to the end, and as always, I'm going to ask you to share three tips from all of your years of experience, all of the businesses that you've run, working with your partner, your wife, exits, partnerships, all of those sort of things. What are three things that you'd like to share with the people listening to our podcast?
Great. Thanks, Jenny. And I'm going to pull from hundreds of things. You know, obviously there's a lot more than three, but I'm going to pick three of sort of my main ones that if, you know, if asked like I am now, I will tell you the number one, the most important thing is, I mentioned it earlier. If you want to grow your business, you need to grow your people. And so that means education. That means giving people an opportunity to have some autonomy over their jobs, their roles, you know, defining the boundaries there, but giving people an opportunity to thrive in their positions, to maybe make some suggestions on how to improve it. Absolutely, make it safe so that they can challenge some things that might not be working. And so you really get involvement from people and help them grow as individuals. We brought in, you know, people that did, you know, spine alignment. We brought in people that did personal financing and budgeting. We brought in all sorts of personal things because we wanted to have people grow. Because if they grow and they're involved, your clients are going to feel that, right? Mm. They're going to see that type of engagement. You know, much like the term happy wife, happy life, or happy spouse, happy house, is a better way of putting it. Yeah. it's happy employees, happy customers. So that's one. The second part to that is if you want to grow your people, you need to first grow yourself. So that is the part that's missing, is we need to grow as people if we want to grow people. So we've got to be on a constant learning journey. We've got to read books, have, you know, peer networks, connect, grow ourselves, learn more tools, do, you know, there's myriad amounts of self-assessment tools out there that can teach you. Last year I did an EQ test and had a 2-hour consult on EQ. I felt like I knew that part of me fairly well, and I learned some invaluable things that I never thought of before. And it's really, I've been different ever since. And so if you're in that constant learning and growing, then it's easier for you to help people learn and grow. So that's sort of
What was that one that you did, just to, not to give anybody else a plug, but I'm interested. So
it was just called an EQ test, and it was another consultant coach that does that's certified on it. It didn't have its name. She just had it as an EQ test assessment.
Nice.
And it was eye-opening for me in some areas. The actual results came in. I wasn't surprised by the results. It was our conversation after, when we were talking about, and I'll give you the example. There's your strength. And then with every strength, there's what she calls a shadow. So if you have this strength and you're using it too much, the shadow of it could be an opposite effect for somebody else. And it was really interesting how, and again, there's a lot more to it, but it's interesting how that conversation came about, that an overuse of your strength could actually cause someone else not to be able to connect and that sort of thing, because EQ is about communication. And so that's a two-parter, right? So there's the grow your business, grow your people, grow your people, grow yourself. And lastly, we touched on this before, but in a lot of the pitfalls in the book, one of the tips is a repeat in many of them, and we spoke about it, is have an agreement in writing for everything. If you have a partnership shareholder agreement, yes, you're married and you're a partner, you know, you and Nick are partners, have a shareholder agreement. It's in writing. You have all the scenarios that could go wrong, because when you're creating a partnership, all you can think of is what is going to go right. Mm-hmm. And so you need to think about what's going to go wrong and how do we cover that off amicably and equitably in a shareholder agreement in writing. So, you know, when I got in business with my parents, you know, my dad said, "Hey, we're cool. We'll just have a handshake." And I said, "No, I'm told that we need to put it in writing." And so we put it in writing, and it did save our relationship. And that was more important than the business. It saved our relationship. So, make sure you have solid employment agreements, partnership agreements, supplier agreements, client agreements, that are really spelled out and super clear. So really it protects you for sure legally, but you know what it does is protect your relationships, so that if things are clear, you can always refer to it, and then there's less strife, there's less lawsuits, you know, you keep your friends longer, you know, that sort of thing. So really important.
No, I love that. And Nick and I don't have a partner agreement. We've never actually had one, as in a business one. We've definitely had it with other partners, but right. But never he nor I. But one thing that we did improve drastically when we implemented EOS was those lanes. And you touched on this with your wife, you and your wife, very clear on our lanes. And and I guess that gave us that terminology without having that agreement, formal agreement between us. It gave us that clarity of when I was straying into Nick's lane or he strayed into mine. Right. Just that clarity, but that was well down the path of us working together, and that was definitely a big a contentious issue prior to that, of, you know, the things that I didn't like doing, I expected him to do, and vice vice versa. Yeah. And then we'd get mad at each other if neither of us did it, and mad at each other if both of us did it. But that, you know, that agreement definitely, keeps us all honest and making us do the things that we don't want to do as well as the things that we do want to do.
Yeah, so, and really, providing the maximum amount of value. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And everybody then has something to fall back on. And like I said, the most amount of value. Well, Nick, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate. I didn't actually ask you. So it's around 11:25 a.m. here in Bali. What time is it for you?
It's 8:25 p.m. here.
So it's you're back in time. You're last night my time. So
that's right.
Really, yeah. I'll tell you what the weather's like today. I already did, and you didn't want to know.
No.
Again, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. So thanks, Nick's book, we'll put it into the links on this podcast. So Nick Thompson, the book is called Look Out, You're About to Get Effed, 13 Biggest Pitfalls of Business and How to Avoid Them. And really looking forward to it. Let's do another one of these when your new book's released. And I'm sure I will see you around the EO traps, but really do appreciate your time.
For sure. Thanks so much, Jenny. Really appreciate it.